Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? It is Friday, August the 7th, 2020. We have some more NBA action here. Welcome back to the FTN NBA Fantasy Podcast. Adam Pfeiffer alongside Joe Metz, second episode. Glad to be here in case you missed our debut episode the other day. We are going to be doing this multiple times a week, hopefully, you know, ramping it up to almost every day per week the rest of this NBA season, because I'll tell you what, man, we talked about it, Joe, but it's been a little bit different in the bubble, but the product, the NBA product has been fantastic.
Yeah, these players have been, I know we mentioned it last time, but they've been much sharper than I expected. You know, each game gets better and better, especially today with the Bucks pulling off arguably the greatest backdoor cover of the season. You know, they were down 23 at one point, won by 14 or 16.
Yeah, that was absurd.
So my mood went from 0 to 100 within 45 minutes. But yeah, this product's been great. I'm really, really, really excited to see how these players ramp it up for the playoffs. Which is, what, a week away?
Yeah, and we're already seeing, we saw the Lakers tonight sit half their team, and yeah, there was you know, injury designations, but let's be honest, I mean, it was, especially in LeBron's case, these guys were definitely resting. And you know, as the good thing about this is most of these teams are fighting. Like, the Lakers are the only team really that aren't fighting for something right now. Which is good. I mean, like, and now we have this, you know, this Orlando-Philadelphia game we're going to talk about where things change. That's why NBA DFS is so interesting, because things can change in a second. So we have five games here starting. This first one starts at 4. That's the other thing. We have games pretty much all day for the most part, which is fantastic. But yeah, we're in the process, I believe, of getting on iTunes and all those platforms. So once we do, we will, of course, let everybody know. And we'd appreciate if you supported us on there. But other than that, yeah, check out the NBA content over on ftndaily.com. There is so much stuff. The game-by-game article, I do it on Saturdays. Joe does it on Sundays. I might actually be doing it for this late, so I'm excited about that. We have the advanced DVP tool, which we will talk about ad nauseum because it's fantastic and it's just so well put together by everybody. And tools, Kyle Murray does the projections and the Sabres. It's just
Eddie's rankings
and Eddie's video or his live show every day. It's just, that's the thing I love about this NBA team too, is because everybody looks at the same stuff. Obviously we look at, like, you know, pace and usage rate, but then everybody else, like Eddie, looks at things differently, especially just from a film perspective, which nobody really talks about for NBA, but I love it. You know, Stefano has really great takes, and he was, you know, the key cog in the DVP tool. It's just, I love it. So I love this team. And let's talk some basketball, man. We got,
let's do it,
Oklahoma City against the Memphis Grizzlies, 4 p.m. start time. Dennis Schroeder still away from the team as he is with his family for the birth of his child. And, of course, Jaren Jackson Jr. will not be playing for Memphis the rest of the year. We saw Brandon Clark back in the starting lineup. Didn't really perform up to expectation, I would say. He was just under 20 DK points. Wasn't really engaged offensively that much. And his price has come up. So for Memphis, and by the way, Jonas Valanciunas was pretty good. The first half was a little bit questionable, but then he got there. Price came down to 7,300. John Morant was really good. He's 8,500. His price keeps climbing. This isn't the greatest of matchups, but Memphis, what do we make of this team? Because it seems like right now, like, their entire offense is flowing through John Morant, Valanciunas, and Dillon Brooks.
Yeah, correct. I mean, those are the three high-volume players. And again, this is a team that has something to play for, push a fast pace, but you hit on it with Morant. This is not a matchup you go out of your way to attack, you know, especially with John Morant. His price went up, I think, what, $500 since the last slate. But Chris Paul is still an all-defensive player. He's an all-NBA defensive player. I'm not going to rant about Chris Paul any more than I did the other day. But in terms of Morant, you know, they're top 10 in the league against scorers at the point guard position. They're top 10 against crafty finishers, middle of the pack against dimers and ball handlers. Now, I weight Morant's matchup more here based on the scorer trait, because look at how much more aggressive he's been in the bubble. Like, he has not seen under 15 field goal attempts since he got into the bubble. His one game with 15 field goal attempts was actually the lowest by 3 field goals. He's not shooting the ball particularly well from beyond the arc, but that's obviously never something we expect him to do. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see this become a game where he takes a step back on offense, distributes a little more to the likes of someone like Dylan Brooks, who has been a really high-volume player, maybe a little more Jonas Valanciunas, who I assume will be on the court quite often to kind of counter the big body of Steven Adams. But this game, you know, Brandon Clark was disappointing in the first game, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a little more aggressive in this game, understanding the pressure that the rest of his team is going to be on. Or the pressure that's going to be on the rest of his team in this matchup, especially considering the fact that he could see, you know, coverage from someone like Nerlens Noel or Danilo Gallinari, who are not too really, really intimidating defenders, for lack of a better word. What are your thoughts on the team?
I think I'm honestly going to go back to Valanciunas, if anything. Like, the matchup against Steven Adams isn't, I don't want to say it's not welcoming, but it's not something I'm like terrified of. And Valanciunas is just, again, we talk about it. If he's going to start playing more minutes, he's going to be an 8K player. He has massive upside. And I think he's still a little bit underpriced at 7,300 with Jaren Jackson Jr. out. He's probably my favorite. I didn't realize that Dylan Brooks was such a high usage player. He's not necessarily going to have the ball in his hands a ton, but they draw up a lot of plays, especially off handoffs, to get him
it's
the ball.
It's a lot of the Clay. It's obviously, take it with a grain of salt when I say like Clay Thompson, but the way that Golden State utilizes Clay Thompson, Memphis utilizes Dylan Brooks in a very similar fashion.
Yeah, his usage rate was like well over 25% with Jaren Jackson Jr. off the floor, which kind of surprised me. But, you know, you have to understand that his peripherals are going to be, for the most part, lacking. But if his shot's falling, and it was definitely falling, you know, the other day, I guess he started off better. He went 7-17, but he started off really well. And he's just going to shoot. He's going to take, I mean, look at these shots since the season resumed, 16, 20, 13, 17. At 5,400, he's still perfectly fine. Yep. I probably won't play Ja Morant just because.
Oh, yeah, we'll eat at the price.
If this game stays close, and it's a 3.5-point spread in favor of the Thunder with a 224 total, the Grizzlies play at one of the fastest paces in the league. We know they're a defense we can attack, and even more so without Jaren Jackson Jr. in the middle. I mean, Chris Paul, the last time it was a competitive game, played almost 40 minutes. Went back down to 31 last game as they really dominated the Lakers. If this game's competitive, Chris Paul could play 35, 36 minutes, and in this matchup, he could be really good. What do you think of the Thunder?
I like the Thunder. I like him a lot. It is an up-tempo matchup, which players like Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander thrive in. This is also a matchup where because of the pace and the amount of possessions that this team will see compared to normal, I wouldn't mind looking at a player like Danilo Gallinari. His price is depressed. You know, Dennis Schroeder, a high usage player, is out. He just hasn't necessarily found the touch that we became accustomed to, but it's also kept his price down. He's only $5,600. He's still going to get a decent amount of rebounds. I don't mind him in this spot, but outside of those three, it's hard for me to go to Steven Adams given his minutes and how inconsistent he's been. I'd much rather go Jovell, like you said. But other than those three, I just don't see much interest in the Thunder, even in the pace matchup, but I am pretty high on those said three. What about you?
I wish Adams was at that $5,400, $5,500 price tag, because I would go to him because the matchup's great. Ja Morant, this Memphis team is among the league leaders in drives per game, so you could get shot-blocking opportunities for him. The problem is he went up to 6,100, maybe because of the matchup. Like, he wasn't necessarily bad last game, but he's still under 30 DK points. Like, it didn't seem like a game where he would have to be priced up, so I'm guessing it's more matchup-based. Like, it's really dependent. Steven Adams is always a guy that it's really dependent on the landscape of the center position, and there's a handful of guys on the slate that we'll talk about. I just wish he was a little bit cheaper. And pace-up games, I'll always have interest in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They're really made for him. Yep. Gets a lot of rebounds, gets steals. His floor is just incredibly high here. So I think Chris Paul is my favorite. Because if this game stays close, Chris Paul has, you know, a 50-point ceiling. But yeah, other than that, like, because he fit, I played some some Dort, and he's going to play 32 to 34 minutes. And if he gets you some peripherals, like he shoots more than you think. He's taken 24 shots the last two games. He at 3,500, he isn't the worst value play.
No, not at all. And going back to Chris Paul quick, I also don't think his ownership's going to be that high. I have a hard time believing that he's going to garner heavy ownership over $8,000 in salary because people game on Chase, and they see – if you look at his game on his current price, he's barely squeaked by that 5X value mark once in the bubble. So I can see people shying away, but this is a – in this game overall, I think Chris Paul might be my favorite overall play. I'd say he's a 1A to Jonas is 1B. But Shea is another player that I have a ton of interest in. I love the Dort call at value. Circling back to Memphis very quickly, Grayson Allen.
Yeah, we should talk about him. I'm glad
you brought that up. Of volume. Like, he's not really known as an offensive player, but he's obviously shooting extremely efficiently. He's seen over 28 minutes per game in two of the last three games, 27 minutes last game. He shot 9 attempts in all three of the last games. My issue with him is that he shot the lights out. Like, he's 6 of 8 from three the last game, 5 of 6 the game before. If you look at his peripherals, there's really barely any production there. Are you willing to take a shot on him at 4,400, or would you rather go down 900 to Dort?
I mean, Allen has a higher ceiling. It's weird to say I'd rather play Dort because I'm not ever really excited to play him. But, you know, well, the thing is, though, you talked about this before we got on the podcast. This is a weird slate in terms of the high-end players. Like, you have Joel Embiid, who's going to be obviously popular at over 10K, but he's the only guy above 9,300.
So you might not even need to dip down that low.
Right. So
that's fair.
It's going to be interesting.
But this is a game I think I will have more interest in than the field.
Gotcha. And I was, before we move on to the next game, I was talking to one of my buddies earlier about how a lot of these guys are shooting lights out from the field in the bubble, and he brought up a really good point. I feel like he mentioned, and I was like thinking about it, this makes a lot of sense. The net and the backboard are probably a lot easier to see. There's nothing behind them.
Yeah. That's a very, very strong point. The other thing, I don't know if you've noticed that I watched probably 6 hours of games today. I was doing literally nothing. Jump shooters are getting fouled a whole lot more on jump shots too. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, incrementally, if you see someone like Dylan Brooks, he's getting the line a lot more because he's getting fouled. Like, he shot 10 free throws last game. Like, that's not something you see out of a player like Dylan Brooks on an everyday basis. But because these players are so trigger happy on defense and I don't want to say rusty, but because of the long layoff, they're going to be prone to more mistakes. That is another reason to target some jump shooters.
All right, let's move on to the next game. Sacramento against Brooklyn. The Kings put up a clinic offensively today against New Orleans, 140 points. De'Aaron Fox, huge game. Bogdanovich, huge game. Harrison Barnes had a good game. These guys are in a pretty interesting spot here against a depleted Brooklyn team that could be even more depleted again with Jarrett Allen questionable. De'Aaron Fox, probably underpriced at 7,600, no?
Yeah, I agree, 100%. I mean, he has the ball in his hands so much, and he runs at such a high pace. Whether this offense does or not, he does. And I feel like he's really taken the reins in the bubble. He's just taken it upon himself to be the offensive catalyst. And is there a better matchup for a player like him right now? Maybe Washington, but I have a hard time thinking that there's a better point guard matchup on the slate.
Yeah, he's a really strong play. You have Bogdanovich, who was just red hot, 13 to 20 from the field, 37 minutes. Like, the Kings are going to continue to just, whoever it gets the hot hand between him and Buddy Hield, it seems like they're going to play the minutes. Buddy Hield only played 11 minutes today. And look, I mean, when Bogdanovich is that hot, you know, why would you take him out of the game? So is this an opportunity where they're both literally the same price?
So then I guess how do you differentiate here? Because what I'm looking at, because obviously, you know, Bogdanovich shot the lights out this game. Go back the game before that, he shot 1 of 15, but he healed in that game, so over 30 minutes. So it's hard to predict who's going to shoot better, but it's very clear that whoever is playing better is going to be the one on the court. So if you look at the ADVP tool, you pull up Buddy Hield against the Brooklyn Nets. They are 17th in the league against scorers. Because he's coming off the bench, they classify him as a bench player. They are 24th against the bench. Against, if you pull up Bogdan, he's classified as a primary ball handler. They are 12th in the league against that said archetype. Again, this is like pulling hairs. So, Adam, which of these two would you have more confidence in this matchup?
I've usually been on the Bogdanovich side. Mm-hmm. But I think recency bias, with the upside that Buddy Hield has shown a lot for this season, I kind of like Buddy Hield. Again, they're the same price, so it's not like, you know, anybody's, you have to, you know, pay up for one or the other. But I think it's an interesting spot. You mentioned how he's come off the bench and Brooklyn has struggled to defend opposing benches. I could see Buddy Hield being a really interesting tournament play here. Brooklyn, by the way, is also, they've actually been really good at defending shooters off screens this season, which Buddy Hield does at one of the highest rates in the NBA. But we have to also remember, this is a different Brooklyn team than the overall numbers that they've shown. You know, they're just completely mm-hmm. depleted. So I have no problem taking a shot on Buddy Hield. And going back to De'Aaron Fox, De'Aaron Fox is a guy that drives the basket and also takes a lot of those short mid-range shots. According to Cleaning Glass, 30% of his shots are coming on the short mid-range, which is inside of 14 feet. It's pretty much like from the free throw line. Only Washington's allowing a higher field goal percentage on such shots this year than Brooklyn at 43%. So it's a smash spot for him. What about Harrison Barnes? Harrison Barnes is usually like the most boring play in DFS. He had a little bit of a ceiling game today, but you're talking about teams playing for something, and Harrison Barnes is, honestly, he's one of the biggest locks on the slate, and maybe in the league. He's just boring, but to play 35 minutes, like he just always plays 35 mm-hmm. minutes, and he's only 4,700, so you can go to him. And then, I mean, the front court's a little bit mad. Bielitsa went back to the starting lineup. Corey Joseph started the game before that, and then they returned to Bielitsa, but he only played 16 minutes. Like, Harry Giles plays good in spurts, but then he can get into foul trouble in his minutes. He's not even in the rotation really at times. It's just tough right now for them.
Yeah, and then Rashawn Holmes finally saw north of 30 minutes today. And kind of disappointed. Like, I came into the bubble with, you know, Marvin Bagley out, expecting Rashawn Holmes to do what he did all season and become one of the best point per dollar plays on the slate, and he hasn't done that. But I'm having a hard time getting away from him against the Nets at 4,900, especially if Jared Allen doesn't play. Like, who is gonna stop him in the post? Like, Caruso is not gonna contend with him on the glass.
He's not gonna be able to keep, like, Rashawn Holmes in the pick. If they were on the pick and roll with Rashawn Mahomes and Jared Allen's not in there, he should be able to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's the issue. And like, but I think the biggest deterrent is his own coach. Like, is he going to play? I think he'll be popular. I think he will be. I think he's a better cash play than a tournament play, because at that ownership, if he does flop, then you're a little more safe. But I just can't get a read on it. If Allen's out, I think I'd prefer him more. But that remains to be seen. You know, Allen's right now questionable due to a sprained ankle. When he had that sprained ankle, I don't know. So speaking of the Nets side, who on this side attracts you, if anyone?
I want Caris LeVert at 7,100.
Yes,
that's Sacramento just, has been a sieve against scoring wings for like 3 years now, and I know he had an underwhelming game against Boston, but you can make the case outside of maybe Joel Embiid that he's going to have the highest usage rate among any player on the slate, and he's just a little too cheap, and the matchup's really good, and we know where this offense is going through. And, oh, by the way, if Jared Allen and Joe Harris sit, the usage rate's just going to get even higher. So he's almost an auto play for me at that price. The question is, where else do you want to go? Because if Harris sits, you probably get more solidified minutes for guys like Garrett Temple, TLC. Garrett Temple's still just a little bit expensive for me. TLC's minutes went back down to 11 last game. Didn't start, like... And if Jared Allen sits, do you go to Dante Hall or Kurucs or any of these guys? It's just gross.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Joe Harris plays, I will have interest in him. He's been playing really well, and he's really developed. He's really expanded his game. He's slashing a lot more now. He's contributing in multi-cat. So I think if he plays, he'll be a good play at 5,300. Obviously, that remains to be seen. Jared Allen, I would have some interest in his price if he plays. But again, that seems more unlikely than Joe Harris. If he sits, Dante Hall wouldn't be the worst play in the world, but I struggle with Dante Hall because he got a decent amount. Well, he got 21 minutes against the Bucks, but that was when LeVert, that was when Joe Harris, that was when Jared Allen were all out. And that was in the beginning of the game when this game was not – when the Bucks started to pull away. So it almost seemed like they just threw him in as like a developmental rotation.
Yeah.
It came down to crunch time. He wasn't in the game.
And Sacramento could go small here.
Exactly. That's my big concern. So if they go small, I would expect Caruso to get a lot more run. You know, he only saw 12 minutes last game, but before that he was seeing at least 17 in each of the two games. That's still not someone I have an interest in. This team outside of LeVert, it's hard for me to pinpoint who I want. I have no interest in Tyler Johnson. I think 5,600 is a horrible price for such an inefficient basketball player. I think Chioza would only be interesting if Caris LeVert sat, which is not going to be the case. So right now for me, it's looking like LeVert, and if Harris plays, I'd have a lot of interest in Joe Harris.
All right, probably the most important game of the slate, Orlando against the Philadelphia 76ers, both teams dealing with the injury bug. Orlando, who already lost Jonathan Isaac, is now likely to be without Aaron Gordon, who suffered a hamstring strain. He is doubtful for this game, so this rotation gets even tighter. And then the big news in Philadelphia, Ben Simmons dislocates his knee. He's going to be out indefinitely. I mean, the last time I looked, he might even not return this year. So
I mean, that was the same. I read into it a little bit and followed some tweets with the injury. That was actually the same injury Andrew Bynum had when he was having that breakout year with LA, and he was out for like 2.5 months. So obviously much different players. Like Andrew Bynum was I know Ben Simmons is what, 6'10", 6'11"?
Yeah.
Andrew Bynum was like a big 7 foot though. Like he was a big man. Mm-hmm. So it might be a little different with Simmons, but I don't think he'll be back for the first round of playoffs.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. So Simmons was moved to the power forward as a starting position. Now we know he was essentially playing point guard. But what does this do for their starting lineup? Is it going to be, you know, Shake at the one? Do they move Tobias to the four and keep Al Horford on the bench? And in that case, you would probably see Richardson at the two. And then maybe somebody like Alec Burks or Korkmaz enters the starting lineup at the three, and then Tobias at the four and Embiid at the five, or do they just go back to Horford at the four, Tobias at the three, Richardson at the two?
Yeah,
either way, dudes are going to see uptick in usage. Have you seen Joel Embiid's usage rate with Simmons off the floor since the restart?
Yeah, it's
43%.
Correct.
And he's over two fantasy points per minute. How do you not play Joel Embiid today?
20% too. And the thing is, especially with him being literally the only player to like significantly pay up for, I don't think
he's going to be insanely popular, as he should be.
I think you start your lineup with Embiid, but I also think you can complement him with a couple pieces from Philly. It obviously depends what lineup they roll out. Traditionally, you know, before the restart without Ben Simmons, Al Horford was a huge beneficiary, and Joel Embiid obviously being the other big one, Tobias Harris and Josh Richardson. Now, if they slide him in and they put him at the one or the two, I'd have a lot of interest in him at his price because he will become the key distributor in the offense. And his price hasn't moved in, what, 2-3 days? I think he's a safe bet for 5X in this matchup at this price. But again, it's contingent on the lineup. What do you see, Adam, as the most realistic adjustment they make without Simmons? Like, if you had to say right now what their starting lineup would be, what do you think it would be?
I personally think it's interesting because, like, if Orlando is at full strength, I would definitely say Al Horford starts at the four. But, like, you're going to see probably Wes Iwundu or Gary Clark start at the four. And that is a situation where Tobias could easily just slide at the four. He's playing four a lot this year anyway. Al Horford, his price is going to mess with me because he sees a big jump in assist opportunities. He has a team-high 16% assist rate with Simmons off the floor. And everybody's going to get opportunities. Ben Simmons is fifth in the NBA in touches per game with 90.5 per game. Like, this is a huge loss to this team. Richardson, I've talked about a lot. He will bring the ball up when Simmons is off the floor. So at 5K, I will definitely get to him. He's probably my second favorite Sixer just based off price. Mm-hmm. Tobias has a usage rate around 30% with Simmons off the floor since the restart. Embiid's obviously the easy plug and play. Then you have to ask about Shake Milton at 5,800. And what if, you know, Matisse Thybulle gets more run, or Alec Burks has actually played pretty well for them. What if he gets more run?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, like, and DraftKings was pretty proactive in the pricing, at least with Tobias Harris sitting at 8,300, Al Horford sitting at 6,600, Embiid's 10-5 is an easy pill to swallow, but it does make it a little harder to make some of these decisions and not just plug and play. You know, like Shake Milton's 5,800. So based on point per dollar, outside of Embiid, because I'm going to count him as a lock, I think Josh Richardson would be my number one play.
I tend to agree. The decision I'm making is who's third between maybe Shake and Horford, because Horford does do a lot more facilitating
distribution. Yes, he does,
which is huge for him because he's just not scoring this year. And you know, Embiid's going to dominate the rebounds, but let's not act like Ben Simmons doesn't get rebounds. I mean, the guy was averaging 7.8 rebounds a game. So like one of Tobias, or like, we could see a Tobias scoring game, but also like a 10 rebound game from Tobias, which would be huge. Yeah. They're all obviously in play. Like, we talk about it all the time with the Sixers. When one of Simmons or Embiid are out, they're pretty much all in play unless they're egregiously priced. They're not exactly, you know, bargains, but they're not egregiously priced. Before we go to Orlando, thoughts on Shake Milton real quick, because his role was obviously increasing before the bubble, and now, you know, Ben Simmons is out. Yeah. So Shake Milton probably going to be the primary ball handler for most of this
game. I like it. I definitely don't mind it. You know, with Simmons off the court since the restart, he doesn't see like a massive uptick in. You know, he sees a 3.2% usage rate bump, which is nice, but he actually sees a 5% drop in assist rate. Obviously, small sample size, but he is going to be a player that relies a little bit more on shot volume than he does on distribution. But his price, 5,800, I think that's a fine mid-tier play. So I don't know if I'd put him ahead of Horford on a point per dollar basis, but I definitely don't mind him. I think his floor is reasonable.
Let's talk about Orlando. Nikola Vucevic, I kind of just want to put him and Embiid in a lot of my lineups. I don't, first of all, he's under 8K, which is always enticing. He, at that price, like, you know, you're going to get at least 35 from him all the time. Mm-hmm. Now you're hoping for more, but like, it's not as bad, it's not as hard of a pill to swallow if he doesn't have the huge game. But if you look, obviously, first of all, you know, usage rate north of 30% with Gordon Isaac off the floor this year, 38% rebounding rate, and nearly 1.4 fantasy points per minute. That's great. He's been very good against the Sixers in his career, and especially lately. Like,
yeah,
look at some of his game logs. I mean, 16, 12, and 7, 25, 12, and 2, 28, 11, and 4, 38, and 4. 27, 13, and 12. Like, he's had some huge games against this team. And while Embiid's an incredible defender, Ben Simmons is probably one of the five best defenders in the NBA. He won't be there. So sub 8K Vucevic, have to like him quite a bit. And
yeah, yep.
I kind of want to play both these dudes in a lot of lineups because I think they can just go at each other.
I absolutely love the play. I think this is another slate, especially with the pricing, where it's going to be pretty easy to run a two center lineup. And if you do that, I think you start with Vucevic and Embiid. Outside of Vucevic, the rest of the Magic are extremely reasonably priced, and Philly's defense with Simmons, you know, after the restart has been atrocious. Without him, it's been even worse. So that opens the door for someone like Evan Fournier, who's only 5,300.
I love him and Terrence Ross.
Do you think we see Ross slide into the starting lineup at the three and they move James Ennis to the four, maybe? Or would you? Or I guess you said you think they might start.
They've started Wes Iwundu a lot at the four, because Gore's missed a lot of time this year. They typically would start Wes Iwundu. If, you know, I would say unless Horford starts at the four, I would guess Wes Iwundu starts. We know he's like an incredibly low usage player, though. Like, Terrence Ross doesn't have to start at 5K because he will play. He can, like, he's a guy that rarely gets into the 30s in minutes when Orlando's healthy, but not just Isaac. Gordon plays some three for them at times, and we know Isaac plays a lot of the three. Like, those two guys are just two wings we're not going to have. Terrence Ross should be able to get to the 30-minute mark at 5K, and I talk a lot about Ross and Fournier, how they do a lot of their work off screens. Ross leads the NBA in points per game off screens at over 4 per game. Fournier's 10th at over 2.5 per game. Philadelphia allows the fourth most points per possession off screens this year and the fifth highest field goal percentage, and as you already mentioned, their defense was lacking in the bubble. And again, Ben Simmons, elite defender, not there. So I love Vucevic, Ross, and Fournier. I guess the question is, do you look at any cheap plays like a Gary Clark if he starts or a Wundu? They're obviously incredibly, incredibly low ceilings. James Ennis has been playing consistent minutes for them and should continue to at 3,700. Mm-hmm. And do you play any Markel Fultz or Augustine?
That's tough. I'm looking at Fultz and Augustine right now. You know, back to Ross. I do prefer Ross. If he comes off the bench, I think he's going to be a usage hog. If he's off the bench, between Fultz and Augustine, Fultz just has not seen the playing time we had hoped. Obviously, you can go down the narrative road and talk about a revenge spot here because of how sour the breakup was between the two. But I actually like DJ Augustine, especially if he draws the start. You know, the absence of Ben Simmons is huge. Like, that is – Ben Simmons, Giannis bias aside, I think should be the defensive player of the year this year.
I agree.
So DJ Augustine is catching a huge break here. Shake Milton is nothing to write home about defensively. You know Augustine's going to get some shots up. He is a decent distributor. The concern is that it might be a 60-40, 50-50 split at point guard. I don't think, you know, you hit on it when we talked about the Memphis-OKC game. You might not even need to go down this cheap. If you do, if you love the rest of your lineup and you need to plug one of them in, if you have 4,600 left, I'd probably choose Augustine in a vacuum. I just don't know if you need to.
Anything else from this game?
No, I mean, before we move on, I hopped over to FanDuel knowing how bad they are with pricing. Embiid, 9,800. Yikes. Horford, 4,800. Oh, Tobias God. Harris, 6,800. Josh Richardson, 4,800. Like, I might roll three Sixers tomorrow. I mean, you can't have four on FanDuel, but there is no reason to not put three in your lineup.
That's wild.
It's ridiculous.
Washington at, versus New Orleans. There are no home and away teams.
I mean, technically with the virtual fans there are, but.
Yeah, I guess you're right. The second highest priced player on the slate is Drew Holiday at 9,300. This matchup is obviously great for pretty much anybody on New Orleans, but for me, I'm just going to play Brandon Ingram at 8,400. I think he's looked pretty good the last two games. He's obviously going to continue to shoot. The Wizards are, you know, the matchup of all matchups. They're bad in pretty much every aspect, but also second most points per possession allowed to isolation. Brandon Ingram, among the top 15 players in points per game off isolation, he's significantly cheaper than Drew Holiday. And then you have Lonzo Ball, who's in a great, great matchup, a pace-up game where he can get steals and lobs to Zion Williamson. He's at 7,400. I think he's a really strong play. And speaking of Zion Williamson, the efficiency has been there the last two games. The minutes still haven't quite been there. He's 8K. What do we do with Zion? And this is the second of back-to-back. So
yeah, it's the second of back-to-back. So if his minutes are going to go up, I don't think it'll be today. But this is a matchup where if he gets 25 minutes, especially based on how efficient he's been over the last two games, where he could return a decent value. But the thing is that 8K, do we really see him topping 40 DK points? I don't.
Who are your favorite Pelicans? Because they're all obviously in great spots. Do you think anybody could rest? I mean, they have too much to play. Yeah.
Yeah, they have way too much to play for. In this spot, I'm kind of a full fade on Drew Holiday, especially with the whole team healthy. The price is just a little too high. I like Ingram, but I actually like Lonzo Ball the most.
Yeah, that's fair.
Ingram would probably be my number two. After that, like, I have a little bit of interest in Derek Favors at his price. It's hard not to because he's so cheap. His minutes are, you know, steady in the lower to mid-20s, but I don't think there's a need for it. Again, like, if I'm going to target this team, I'll probably stick with Ball and Ingram. What about you?
Yeah, they're easily my two favorite guys. Zion scares me because he could have, like, 45 fantasy points in 25 minutes here. Like, I don't think anybody would be stunned by that. But this sets up so nicely for Lonzo Ball and how he likes to play.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
can get a lot of steals and get out in transition and throw those lobs and throw those passes. So yeah, him and Ingram are my two favorites. Like, yeah, if you want to play Drew Holiday, this is a slate. I guess you could do it, but
But this is another game where there's some ridiculous pricing discrepancies. Like, I don't know if I'd be comfortable with Zion at $8K on DraftKings, but at $6,800 on FanDuel, I think he makes for a great play, especially with, you know, the extra points for steals and blocks. What about the – obviously, this is going to be a massive, massive
– Yeah, there's no line yet, but these are two of the fastest-paced teams in the league, so –
What do you like on Washington if you had to pick a couple plays?
Thomas, I mean, it's hard to ignore what Thomas Bryant's doing right now. I mean, a 47 burger against Joel Embiid and company last game.
I did not expect him to see over 30 minutes in that game. I thought, like you said on the pod, Embiid is a player that rattles young centers, gets him into foul trouble. He did have four fouls, but he spread them out. He looked really, really good, especially in the paint. 10 rebounds, 4 blocks, scored 19. Like, is this now an everyday? Like, can we expect him to get 30 minutes and produce like this every game?
I mean, you would think, because he's always been productive when he gets time, and like, they're just, who else are they going to put out there to produce? It's interesting because he's right there with Jonas Valanciunas.
Yep.
I think I prefer Valanciunas, but
I think I prefer Valanciunas.
It's hard to ignore what Thomas Bryant's doing.
Yeah, I think he'd get more ownership, but this is a good spot for him. It is, like, you know, you don't see New Orleans run a ton of small ball that would phase Bryant out. You know, he'd still come in. I know Jackson Hayes is a much more versatile center, but he's still big enough where they'd require Bryant to go on the floor. Maybe put Rui at the five, but I like him. He's not my favorite play on Washington, but I definitely think he's in play.
Who's your favorite play? I mean,
I love Troy Brown.
Troy Brown's still too cheap. He's too cheap.
He's a multi-category contributor. He's an efficient scorer. He also shoots a lot. Like, this is I don't think at this point Washington's really fighting for anything. I don't know how many games they are out of the 8 seed. But he's going to see minutes regardless. Like, he's seen over 30 minutes a game, every single game in the bubble. 36 last game. This, again, is a massive, massive pace-up spot. And against someone like Brandon Ingram or even Drew Holiday, there's a chance for peripherals because the guys have the ball in their hands so much.
Any interest in Ish Smith at $5K? It looks like the last two games has taken over the starting point guard duties. Shabazz Napier, just 18 minutes in their last game. Ish Smith was at 30. And then Jerome Robinson's played at least 28 minutes in every bubble game here, and he's been quietly productive.
Yeah, I don't hate Ish Smith, but I'm never going to actively like go out of my way to target.
He's a filler play.
Obviously, yeah. But yeah, Jerome, I mean, I know you mentioned Jerome Robinson on the last pod, and it kind of, like, it's, look at how consistent he's been. It's odd. He's had over 20 fantasy points in every single game in the bubble. Again, I don't know if we'll need to go down there, but he's another, I think I'd rather play him for 4,900 over Ish Smith, as crazy as that sounds.
Fair enough. Anything else before we go to the last game?
No, sir.
Toronto and Boston should be a pretty good one here.
I think this will be a better real-life game than it will be fantasy production, but yeah. I'm really, really looking forward to this
Kemba
game.
Will be back. How many minutes will he play? That is the question. I would imagine. I mean, he played 27 before the Brooklyn game. So, like, if you told me Kemba would play 27 minutes at $6K, I think he's got to be a little bit interesting. Like, if you – Tatum, man, I mean
– He's so good. He's so good.
He's only had to play 18 minutes because they got all these contributions from, like, Brad Wanamaker, and Robert Williams had a huge game in just 18 or 19 minutes. So, like, the high upside games from these Boston guys when we wanted them without Kemba, they weren't really there because it was kind of a team effort thing.
Yeah, and Tatum, I think Tatum had two fouls in the first like 3 minutes, and he chucked in towards the end of the first and recorded his third foul.
Who do you like from Boston?
Boston, I still like Tatum. I think under anytime he's around the $79 to $8,200 range, based on volume alone, he's going to be a great play. This also seems like a game he'd get up for, but with Kemba back, we can obviously temper some expectations. Jaylen Brown's also been playing out of his mind.
He's my favorite player.
He is still super cheap.
He's been one of the best spot-up shooters in the NBA, and Toronto doesn't allow a ton of like efficiency. Like, they're still a good defense, but because the rest of their defense is so good, teams end up having to spot up against them. They allow the most spot-up points per game. if this could be a spot where Jaylen Brown's going to get a lot of spot up opportunities, and I think he's done really good. In three meetings, he's averaging 40 fantasy points per game and 24 real points, and he's 8 of 16 from three.
Yeah, I love this spot for Jaylen Brown. I think he's too cheap. There's no reason, no disrespect to Gordon Hayward. I don't think he should be more expensive than Brown.
Nope.
But again, to me, this is a better basketball matchup than it is a fantasy environment. So aside from Jaylen Brown and Tatum, I don't really feel confident, especially considering the other options on the slate, investing so much into Boston.
Close it out with Toronto. Fred VanVleet is quickly becoming one of my favorite players in the league. He is awesome.
He just plays so hard every game.
He's smooth when he plays. He's been fantastic the last three games, at least 40 DK points in all of them. Look, the Toronto,
he plays so many minutes, too.
Yeah, that's the thing with Toronto starters. That's why Nick Nurse is the GOAT. Like, Siakam, Lowry, and VanVleet are going to play 35 minutes every time the game's competitive, which is why they're pretty much always in play. Now, Ibaka and Gasol is the only, difference, because they're kind of splitting minutes at times. But like, even OG Anunoby's playing 30 minutes pretty much every game. It's hard to ever say the Raptors guys are bad plays when they're playing 35 minutes a night, and I would not expect this game to be a blowout in either way. So when, Lowry's been really good in the bubble, but $1,000 difference, I'll just take VanVleet. And I think Siakam is really solid at 8,200 as well.
Yeah, I agree. So, looking at Siakam, would you rather go Siakam for 8,200 or Tatum for 7,900?
Tatum.
Yeah, I think I go Tatum too. But other than that, like VanVleet, I mean, these teams have played three times this season already. VanVleet, he's not seen under 37 minutes in a single game. The issue with him is he shot under 27% in two of them. The way he's playing now, I know Boston is a very, very good perimeter defense. I don't see him shooting 25% this game. VanVleet is quickly becoming one of my favorite plays on the slate. And I was shocked looking at his assist numbers. Like, he's really taking over the facilitator aspect of his offense as well.
He's so good.
I absolutely love Fred VanVleet. I don't hate OG at 5,200. I just think there's better plays. If you're looking,
I'd rather play the Orlando guys in a heartbeat.
I was about to say I'd much rather play Evan Fournier, much rather play Terrence Ross. I would almost even rather play like someone like Ish Smith if you're in utility. I just think they're a little more consistent, while his upside might not be as great as OG's. Do you see any interest in Serge? Marc Gasol is dirt cheap, but his minutes have been okay, but production's been pretty
good. You could talk me into Marc Gasol at 4K. At 4K.
Yeah,
100%.
That might be the lowest price we've seen him at in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, and like, the one area where Boston can be had is in the post. They're bottom five in post defense. Siakam posts up, around 3 points per game, which is, above league average. It's not like top 15 or anything, but it's up there. And, Gasol will post up occasionally. He does shoot a lot more threes nowadays, especially with Toronto, but at 4K, he doesn't have to do much. So, I agree. Marc Gasol at 4K is pretty nice.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm fine with Kyle Lowry. I'd just rather take the savings with VanVleet. But I have no interest in any of the deep bench guys either.
I agree. Five-game slate, pretty interesting one. I think the focal point is going to be that Philadelphia-Orlando game and the Washington-New Orleans game, because, the injuries opening up things for Orlando and Philly, and then just the pace and the defenses in Washington and New Orleans. Really, only news we're going to be waiting on, I think, is Jared Allen. I'm expecting Gordon to be out, so I guess we're waiting on that technically, but I'm expecting him to be out, so it's always good to have mostly news the night before slate.
Yes, so it's really just Jared Allen and Joe Harris, also questionable, but pretty clean slate, so, knowing the NBA, something will break at 3:59 p.m.
I will be taking the game-by-game article. I'll be starting that right after we get off this podcast, a little bit later tonight. Apologies, that's on me. But yeah, hopefully you guys continue to enjoy this podcast. It's always fun to talk basketball. Joe and I will be back next week. Best of luck on this five-game slate starting at 4 o'clock. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. And as always, we will talk to you next time on the FTN NBA podcast. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.